Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, October 5th, 2015. And with me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I am splendid. Lovely weekend.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. And John Martellaro, I hope you had a good weekend as well.
Yes, I did. I'm fit as a fiddle.
Excellent. That makes me so happy to hear. And I'm glad we all had a good weekend. I'm glad you guys are here today. And I think the first thing that I want to jump into, actually, I'm just teasing. First thing I want to do is tell everyone that we have a sponsor this week, and that sponsor is Downcast, the podcasting app. Very happy about that. I'll talk more about that in a bit. But first, Brian, you talked about Tim Cook on Friday and his interaction with the NSA and what this means potentially for our personal privacy and security as Apple device users.
Okay. I wouldn't quite have characterized it that way, but that's okay. Mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
Tim did an interview on NPR's All Things Considered with Robert Siegel. And you can listen to the interview yourself if you go to the article in the show notes. We've got it embedded for you to play. And he was asked about security and backdoors. And the biggest thing that stood out about it is he said that he didn't think that we'd hear – actually, I'll read the quote. I don't think you will hear the NSA asking for a backdoor. Robert Siegel says the FBI, and Tim Cook says, there have been different conversations with the FBI, I think, over time. And I've read in the newspapers myself. Tim's always so careful. Mm-hmm. Back to his quote. But my own view is everyone's coming around to some core tenets. And those core tenets are that encryption is a must in today's world. And I think everyone is coming around also to recognizing that any backdoor means a backdoor for good guys as well as bad guys. Bad guys as well as good guys. And so a backdoor is a non-starter. It means we're all not safe. Robert Siegel, for the U.S. government and other governments as well, Tim Cook, for any government. I don't support a backdoor for any government, ever.
That's a pretty clear and strong statement right there.
It is a very, very clear and strong statement. The big takeaway is if he actually – we've talked a lot and written a lot about the fact that Tim Cook is the most careful and precise speaker in the ranks of technology executives. He is always so just incredibly deliberate with what he says. It's astounding to me how deliberate he is. So for him to be saying that he doesn't think that we're going to hear the NSA asking for a backdoor is significant.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Because they have been. I mean, through the DOJ, the White House, the FBI, and other law enforcement has specifically asked for a backdoor. And we have no idea what the National Security Agency doesn't tend to ask to speak publicly about such things. But blogs that are considered mouthpieces for the NSA have talked about the need for a backdoor and that sort of thing. So this would actually represent a significant change. And it's an important one because Tim Cook is precisely right. The backdoor open for anyone is open for everyone. This is just a fundamental fact of security, digital security.
Brian, I have a question for you. For the preceding month or two, I had been reading a lot about the government's interest in having these backdoors,
mm-hmm, exactly,
so that they could deal with terrorists and other criminals. And it seemed like a cognitive dissonance to me that the government was requesting this backdoor, all the while technically knowing that it would be a problem and that it would introduce issues, as Tim Cook just described in your quote. And so I'm kind of intrigued by the idea that there had been this initiative. And I'm wondering how it plays out that the government thought that it could ask for the backdoor, all the while knowing it was a technical bad idea, and then have a meeting with Tim Cook, and then all of a sudden everything's resolved. What do you think played out there?
Well, I don't think that that's what's been happening at all. I think there have been a series of conversations between Apple and Tim Cook and you know, Apple's security experts and Microsoft security experts and Google security experts and lots of people's security experts and the various branches of the government, both all these are on the executive side, and also between Congress and the tech world. And I think that there's been this ongoing debate. Not only that, but we had the original what was the 90s war called? The crypto wars.
Yes.
Yeah, the crypto wars, dealing with encryption technology and whether or not it can be exported. And we had this exact same argument has already played out between Congress and the executive branch and the tech world in the 90s, and reality and sanity and the tech world and, quite frankly, we the consumers won that particular round. Now we're just doing it all again. So I don't think this was like suddenly there's a meeting with Tim Cook and everything's fine. I think this was Tim Cook implying, but certainly not saying, that all those talks are finally reaching fruition.
So he's sort of like punctuating the whole long discussion, culminating in Apple's position.
I think so. I mean, certainly the FBI has made these calls recently. And he doesn't say that he doesn't think that the FBI is going to be making these calls. He said that he doesn't think that we'll hear the NSA asking for it. But then he turns around and he says that he thinks that the FBI – he essentially says – that he thinks the FBI is coming around. And I don't think he would say that if the FBI hadn't already come around, at least privately.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. And I bet you're right.
I'm, you know, utter speculation on my part, but like, you know, I Tim is so deliberate.
Yeah, his words are very calculated.
Always.
Yeah. So I think you're right. That probably means, at least unofficially, the FBI is on the same page now, too.
I wonder, just speculation on my part, if the government didn't come to Google and Microsoft and Apple and say, can you do this in such a way that you can ensure that only we can do it and the bad guys could never get in? And after some technical discussion, the technology company said, no, we can't. And maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is you know, the core tenets is a great turn of phrase for Tim to use. These are core tenets. In the world of security, these are core tenets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're talking about the NSA is one of the things that the NSA is charged with is, of course, collecting intelligence. But another thing that the NSA is charged with is to help protect the U.S. interests. And part of the problem here is that the NSA has been involved in not only finding exploits, finding holes in operating systems and software and whatnot, but then not telling the company so that they can fix them so that the NSA can actually use them.
Right.
And we saw this, the CIA and the NSA, of course, are two different entities, but this business that happened in China where someone, I'm looking at you, the Chinese government, put out fake Xcode
installers
so that they would insert malicious code into apps and actually look legitimate. And we know that those techniques were first developed by the CIA for their own use. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there is a lot at play here with the people that we normally think of as the good guys, not necessarily doing the good guy thing.
And this is why I'm glad that we're seeing the tech companies stand up to our government and say, no, this isn't something that we can do.
Correct. Because they can't.
Right.
They just can't.
Yeah, and if they did, well, I think that'd be very irresponsible because they'd be doing exactly what Tim Cook said, which is opening a back door for bad guys as well as good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyhow, Tim's comments were very welcome for me. I was really glad to hear that. And it makes me good or feel good knowing that the tech companies that sometimes we get annoyed with and don't always trust, at least in this case, are doing the right thing.
Did you listen to the full interview?
No, I've listened to about half of it.
Robert Siegel starts asking him about the car.
Oh,
and nice. And Tim laughs and goes, "Do you have any other questions?" He's like, "Well, you know, why wouldn't you be willing to talk about the car? Everybody's talking about a car. You know, Google's got a car, and you know, Uber's looking at making self-driving cars. Tesla. You know, why wouldn't you want to talk about a car?" And Tim Cook's like, "Do you have any other questions?" It was rather interesting and entertaining, not surprising,
of course.
Interesting and entertaining,
but you know, it would have been inappropriate to not at least ask because, hey, you know, you're interviewing Tim Cook.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't ask, you don't know if you're going to get an answer.
Yeah, you know, and NPR, generally speaking, has the real deal when it comes to reporters. So he did press him. And I think that I just to characterize completely on my own here, Tim Cook's refusal to answer any questions, and especially the way he did it, was, I mean, like, if anyone is clinging to the idea that Apple is not working on a car, please
it's okay to give up that notion.
Yes, give it up. It's happening.
Yeah. Hey, did I mention we have a sponsor this week? Actually, I did mention that. Our sponsor is Downcast, which is pretty awesome. If you're not familiar with Downcast, they are or have a podcast playback and management app that you can get for the Mac, for the iPhone, the iPad, and the Apple Watch. And it's really great because you can take your podcasts and manage them through this app instead of Apple's own podcast app. And it will remember where you are in a show. So you can start listening, say, on your Mac, but then you have to take off and go run some errands, and it picks up on your iPhone where you left off, which is really nice. And then bonus, it actually understands what an enhanced podcast is, which is great because Apple is kind of Apple gave us enhanced podcasts, and then they just abandoned the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad because there's a lot of people that are looking for that extra content, you know, all the chapter markers and everything else that you can get as part of an enhanced show. And actually, MacGeekGab, we do that with MacGeekGab. You can get an enhanced version there.
MacCast does that too, Adam Christian's
show. MacCast does that, yep. And we have chapter markers in Daily Observations. So having an app that does it all and recognizes all of that too, that's just awesome. And you can pick up Downcast for only a couple dollars, which is great. It's cheaper than the latte you're going to get at Starbucks today. And if you want to go check it out, and I think you really should, because this has become my favorite podcast playback and management app, just go to their website, downcast.fm/TDO. And that's going to get you right where you need to go so that you can download your own copy of Downcast. And it lets the Downcast people know that you listen to us and you like what they have to offer. So go check that out, downcast.fm/TDO. Get your copy of Downcast today, and you won't be disappointed. It's a really great, really great app. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to hit today, and this came up out of our discussion this morning before the show. John, you were looking at what Samsung is doing with their new smartphones and the way they handle credit card readers.
Right. On Friday, on Particle Debris, I mentioned the new technique that Samsung has introduced into Samsung Pay. The magnetic secure technology, MST. And to make it really quick, what happens is that new Samsung smartphones and notes can be placed next to a conventional terminal and can simulate the magnetic field of a card being drawn through the point of sale reader. And so you don't necessarily have to have NFC for this technique to work. And so it raised all sorts of questions in my mind, and Brian and I started chatting about it. How secure is it? How long will it be in effect? Now that the banks have issued smart cards and the merchants are all busily upgrading their point-of-sale terminals to NFC, how long will we even have the ability for magnetic strips on cards to be used? Is there going to be some cutoff? We haven't heard about any phase out, you know, but certainly having a smart card issued to the customer and the ability to read a smart card doesn't completely eliminate the opportunity for fraud, as what happened to Target through breaking into their magnetic card readers. So all of a sudden, I have a whole lot of questions about this that I didn't have before. And Brian, I wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
Well, the first thing is that this just strikes me as yet another example of Samsung thinking it's relevant and that it's anything other than a commodity hardware maker, harnessing other people's operating systems. And, as I wrote about it, I don't know, a couple of years ago now, because it said that Samsung had delusions of software relevance. And they just, they so want to be Apple. They so want to be, this company that has a platform, and they don't. All of their services are just so lame and irrelevant, and the redoing services, largely redoing, not always, but largely redoing services that other companies like Google in particular are just much better at. And in this particular case, I mean, there are a lot of Samsung smartphones out there, but what? You said two models are running Samsung Pay right now?
I think it's two or three. I think there's two Galaxy phones and a Galaxy Note that can do this.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't even that many. No one cares. No one cares. This isn't going to be relevant to much of anyone. And this ability that they're touting is it has a definitive shelf life.
Right.
Yeah. When I heard about this feature, my first reaction was, wow, this is like Samsung announcing that they're using styluses on their smartphones after the iPhone was introduced.
Well, and they did.
And they did. And now, yeah, exactly. now here we are at a point where, it's past October 1st. So that means in the United States that banks are now in the position where they are saying, if you as a merchant are still using a swipe card reader for transactions, you are responsible for any credit card fraud. So,
yeah, we're moving away from the magnetic stripe so fast. The ability to fake a magnetic stripe. I mean, first of all, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know anything about this specifically happening. I don't even know to understand the technical feasibility and whether or not it could, but it just wouldn't surprise me if someone ends up hacking that. That's assuming, of course, that anyone bothers to try, since there's so few devices that can actually do it. But it's just not going to be useful for very long. I mean, I think my knee-jerk quip was that should be a significant advantage for several weeks.
I think you're right, Brian. Too little, too late.
Too little, too late, and it was. These are not things that Samsung should even bother trying to do. Not until they can develop a world class operating system of their own, where they control the hardware and the software like Apple does.
You know, on one hand, I agree with you, Brian, but on the other hand, I disagree. And my disagreement comes from the fact that there's so many Android device makers out there. All these companies need to find little things to set themselves apart. And for Samsung, where are they going to find those things if they're going to be using Android instead of their own platform where they control all the elements? And it has to be little gimmicky things like, hey, you don't actually have to swipe your card. We'll trick the reader into thinking you just did.
Well, but so that has worked precisely one time for Samsung.
And that was screen
large
size.
That was large screens. They were the first to do, they were first to be successful with large screens. Of course, this was actually building off of their success of copying Apple with the Galaxy devices that look like an iPhone, but whatever. They built on that, and then they had a large screen device, and it was the hit of the night, and really propelled Samsung to the forefront of the Android makers. And boom, it turns out that at some point Apple was actually able to make it a large screen device, and Samsung has tried little gimmicky things dozens and dozens of times. One of them has worked. And that one that worked was so easily copyable that it was soon irrelevant.
And my guess is that they will continue with the same pattern where they just try little things and see what sticks and what makes a difference for them or makes them stand out in some way. And eventually, they'll hit something that works again for a little while. And
maybe.
It's like that old saying where if you put enough monkeys in a room with typewriters for a long enough period of time, eventually they will produce a Shakespeare sonnet.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. I mean,
yeah, we got our sonnet. It was large screen devices.
Yes.
They were right about large screen devices. Of course, it was just one of a million things that they were trying. But
that's the one that stuck.
That's the one that stuck. They were right about it. The Apple was slow to turn around and do the same thing. But now that's irrelevant.
To put a final punctuation on Brian, the merchant should be eager and willing to turn off their magnetic strip readers soon. As soon as they note that all their customers are anxious to use Apple Pay and smart cards. And so this, as you said, this is a limited lifetime technology for Samsung, and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Android Pay or what? And Google Wallet, what are they calling it these days?
I believe it's Google Wallet. Or is it Google Pay now?
It's Android Pay. It was Google Pay. Wallet there and then go. Android Pay Android later. Pay.
That is going to be infinitely more relevant than Samsung Pay. It's going to end up being an Android Pay versus Apple Pay.
Just that we don't steer the listeners wrong. These Samsung phones also have NFC, and they can use the NFC terminal.
That's going to matter.
I agree. That's where the future is for mobile transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're out of time. So, Brian, it was great to have you here today.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, it's always awesome. John, I'm so glad you're able to join me today as well.
My pleasure.
And Downcast, thank you for being a sponsor today. And listeners, head over to downcast.fm/TDO. Download their podcast player app and be much happier when you're listening to shows on the go, because it's a really great way to manage and listen to your podcasts. Listeners, thank you for joining us today. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.